Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly radio show where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. On this show, your host Garrison Reed sits down with Vashti Bunyan. Vashti discusses returning to writing music, recording look-aftering, and her thoughts looking back at Just Another Diamond Day.
It was such a fantastic day, you know. It wasn't something that had been planned. It was something that just, everything fell into place just miraculously.
Vashti Bunyan's debut, Just Another Diamond Day, was released a full decade before many of her contemporaries' births. The album, which got press comments comparing her to Bob Dylan, gained little steam and soon became a cult record. Here's a snippet of Against the Sky from her new record, Look Aftering. Was produced by Max Richter and features the talents of many of Bunyan's contemporaries. For the upcoming record, the press release notes a pretty extensive list of instruments. How did you decide upon that array?
It just happened bit by bit that with every song that we worked on, we just got different ideas for different colors, and also there were different people involved in different songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really plan it from the start. It just kind of happened organically, I guess, each song dictated the different colors it needed, and we just made it up as we went along.
Yeah. It seems that a lot more is going on than on Just Another Diamond Day.
Yes.
Were you limited during the recording of that record?
Well, when I went into the studio to make Diamond Day, I had come pretty much straight off the road. I've been traveling for a couple of years. And I just had a guitar, and I really didn't have much to do with deciding what was going to be on what song. That was Joe Boyd, who planned it and who produced the album, and he brought in Robin Williamson from the Incredible String Band and Simon Nicol and Dave Swarbrick from Fairport Convention to play on some of the songs. I didn't know who they were because I'd been away from music for such a long time. I didn't even know who the Incredible String Band were. But I really enjoyed playing with these people. And we didn't rehearse or anything. We just went straight into the songs in the studio, and we just did them. And then three of the songs were arranged by Robert Kirby, who, again, I didn't know him. And he didn't know me. And he brought in a string quartet and some recorders. And apart from that, I think the only other instrument on the album was a trumpet, which Robert Kirby played. And I didn't really... Apart from asking for the trumpet and playing a bit of recorder myself, I didn't have much to do with the other decisions, you know, with the other instrumentation. And so maybe it was a little limited, but it was still, for me, it was a lot more than I was used to, because I was just me and a guitar. So mm-hmm. For me, it was almost orchestrated.
Yeah. Whereas on this record, you had full control?
Yes. That was a big difference for me, that I was right in there, right from the beginning, working with Max on how we would... Well, I'd done some of the arrangements before I met Max, and he was very faithful to them, and he added a lot of his ideas, and some of the songs, some of the more recent songs, he arranged them completely, and then others we collaborated on. But I was there, you know, I could say yes or no. I could say I didn't want something, and Max would be wonderfully patient and never got upset. So I felt that I had much more control time, that I could say what I wanted without risk of upsetting anybody, and it would happen. And that was a big difference to me, that I had a voice.
Yeah. Making this record and with the gap, did you feel any pressure for, like, continuity between then and now?
I didn't feel any pressure. I think... When I first started recording the new songs, I wanted very much for them not to sound like Diamond Day, and I went out of my way to make them sound different, but it really didn't work, and it was only when I gave up any idea of trying to impose a style on it or an idea on it. When I just did what I do, and it was Max really who persuaded me that I had to be much more honest and just do what I do, and if it works, works, and if it doesn't, well, it doesn't. So yeah. I then decided that I would play the guitar parts myself, but I wouldn't worry about how it was going to come out. I couldn't worry about it. I just had to do it and then see at the end how it came out. And that's what we did. We didn't have any plan at all.
Yeah.
The very last.
Look Aftering is laden with collaborations. How did these artists fit on the record? Like, what are their roles? Like Devendra and Joanna Newsom and Adam Pearce?
All of those people, it just turned out miraculously that they were around at the time we needed them. That Joanna was in Glasgow doing a show, and the next morning she was able to come into the studio with us and give us a whole morning of her music. Mm-hmm. And then she had to be miles away in Manchester for a sound check that afternoon. So it was incredibly generous of her to do that. And with Devendra, he just happened to be in London the day that we had booked a studio for Max's string quartet and the oboe player. And Devendra and his friends were in London that day, so they came by. And the other wonderful thing was that Robert Kirby, who had done the arrangements on Diamond Day, and I hadn't seen him since that time, he was working around the corner from the studio that day, and he came in the evening and played trumpet and French horn. And it was such a fantastic day. You know, it wasn't something that had been planned. It was something that just everything fell into place just miraculously. And it was a wonderful day. And then with Adam Pearce, oh yes, and Adam came that day as well. Mm-hmm. Adam brought the most amazing array of different instruments along with him. And, you know, it was extraordinary that he was free that day as well. And Adam Pearce, he was away on tour, so he sent us a download of the dulcimer for one of the tracks, which just fitted so beautifully, just knocked me out when I heard it. I haven't yet met him, so I haven't been able to thank him yet, but I loved what he did.
Yeah. What is the lyrical subject matter on Look Aftering?
It's mostly about looking back, which is partly what the title means. Diamond Day was all about looking forward. It was all about an optimistic view of the future. And now, 35 years later, I found that what I was writing mostly about was trying to make sense of my life over the last while when I wasn't writing songs. I think I was maybe trying to catch up on myself. And so a lot of them are about looking back, or they're a bit nostalgic, maybe. And also some of them are about my children, and I think just a lot of the things that have happened to me over the while, and thoughts that have occurred to me over this last little while.
Once I had a child, he was wilder than moonlight. He could smiling like sunshine, she could see it all, like she'd been here before.
The word look aftering seems to so well define the shared relationship between you and these contemporaries of yours.
Uh-huh.
And there's just something really, I guess, comforting in that relation between, you know, inspiring and, like, symbiotic, really, you know?
I'm so pleased that you picked up on that, you know, because it can mean so many things. It is about looking back, and it is about taking care of people. It is about just, I don't know, once we'd finished making the album and we were all sipping there after the mastering and after the last note had been done. We had to decide what we were going to call the album, and it just seemed completely right at that moment that we'd all been listening to it for 12 hours solid, and it just seemed to encompass everything that we all felt about it. Afterwards, I wasn't so sure. I thought that people might find it a little too sweet, you know, which is always the word that's directed at me. But on the other hand, it does encompass everything that I felt about the album, and I feel about the people who I've met since I came back to music. They are all such brilliant individuals, and so different to the way that I experienced my musical contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so generous with each other, so generous to me, and I just I love them for it. I love the way that they are in the world, you know?
Yeah. Did the collaborations you were doing with Devendra and the Animal Collective inspire the work that is on Look Aftering?
I guess it must have. But when I was working with Animal Collective particularly, I thought that their work is so unique and individual, and there's no way that I could take anything from that and put it into mine. We work very differently. I write very differently to them, and I didn't want to feel that I was trying to emulate them in any way. I didn't think that I could anyway. So I didn't want to steal anything from them.
Yeah.
And the same with Devendra. I feel that Devendra is doing what I did, perhaps. He's doing something. His sensibility is very similar to mine back in 1968, when it was completely unseen, unheard, and unremarked upon. And it's not for me to do that now. You know, that's being done by other people, and I must do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, I'm not part of what they do. Maybe what I did is part of what they do, but what I do now is what I do now.
Yeah. The record, Look Aftering, you said that it's kind of a reflecting record. What are your thoughts looking back at the time of Just Another Diamond Day?
Oh, tremendous affection. I'm very proud of what we did, because at that time it was very much away from the norm. It was quite brave what we did with the horse journey and everything. And the music, I'm glad that I did what I did, even though it wasn't seen then. I'm incredibly lucky that it is being seen now and heard. I don't know, I'm just kind of proud of my whole generation, really, back then.
Now that the record's release in October, what is the plan from there on?
Well, I'm hoping to make myself do some live shows, something I've never done. And so that's my ambition for myself, is to be able to do that and not tremble from head to foot in front of an audience.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd really like to do, and I'd also like to write much more music. Now that I've started, I would really like to carry on with it and not abandon it this time.
Whatever pulled the wind that night, it had it bring a tree down, untidy lime tree holding tight to the end of my last garden.
Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guest today, Vashti Bunyan, can be found on her website, anotherday.co.uk. Music samples in this show are from her 2005 record, Look Aftering. For more information on this release, visit fat-cat.co.uk. For more information, including a transcription of this interview, please visit indieinterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in its production, send your thoughts to indieinterviews@gmail.com. Thanks again. See you next week.
Slates fly, but rows of chimney pots don't wave like trees against the sky.